Hi, I'm Allison.
And I'm Taylor.
And together, we're the Anxiety Chicks.
Each week, we will dive deep into a different topic about anxiety and the real-life experiences we all go through,
while giving you all the top tools and tips you need for your journey to recovery.
Our degrees may say therapist and dietitian, but together, we are just real chicks on our own healing journeys, too.
Join us as we take you from panic to power and reduce the stigma of mental health. Remember, you're never alone, and we're all in this together.
Hi, healers. It's Allison here. So I want to tell you a little bit more about how Taylor and I got started with our podcast. And the platform we've been using, which is Anchor, has been so user-friendly and so amazing. I just want to tell anyone else out there that is thinking about starting a podcast, Anchor is the way to go. First of all, it's completely free, so hello. Second of all, there's so many creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. It's crazy. I'm recording this right from my phone, and it literally just looks like the record button on your videos or your Instagram. So it really is such a user-friendly platform, and the coolest thing is you can add any song from Spotify directly to your episodes too. And the possibilities are seriously endless for what you can create, whether it's music analysis, your own radio show, or something the world's never even seen before. Anchor also distributes your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so many other platforms. And you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. So it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And like I said, it's so user-friendly. I recommend Anchor. Go to anchor.fm to get started, or the Anchor app. See you later, healers.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Anxiety Chicks podcast. I'm Allison Sepinara.
And I'm Taylor.
And we are so excited to be back again this week. We hope you guys enjoyed our episode last week about the Sunday scaries.
I liked it too.
Oh, I got a lot of really good feedback too from people.
Our different like thoughts towards it. Like how I was like, oh, it's like when you're hungover and you were like, oh, and then we like talked about it. I like that. That was good.
I know. And I think that there's a lot of people that related to that type of Sunday scare, you know, that anxiety on Sundays. So if you haven't listened to it, go back. And I think even if you don't have, you know, the Sunday scare, like scaries on Sunday, you know, anxiety on Sunday, I feel like everything we talked about can actually has happened to me throughout the week sometimes. So not just on Sundays. So it's a really good episode. So definitely go listen to that. So how are you doing this week, Taylor?
Doing good. Can't complain.
Yeah, good.
Not much going on.
Good. Well, I'm happy to report that my dad is in rehab finally for his hip. He broke his hip. I think I talked about this last week a little bit.
Yeah.
That it was a difficult week for me because my dad fell and he had been struggling, you know, with balance issues and stuff. And we were really scared, and he broke his hip. So he had to get a hip replacement and or surgery. I don't know if it was a replacement, but he broke his femur. That's like the first time I ever heard really like femur. I don't really know a lot about that stuff with the body. So I finally would be able to visit him this week, and it's been really hard. So for anyone, you know, that has a loved one who, I mean, honestly, during this time with COVID, I mean, at any time it's horrible, but with COVID, you know, we're thankful that my mom was even allowed to visit him and all that stuff. So finally I can see him. But so that's been good. And yeah, I feel like this week has been better. Remember last week we were talking about how we were in such a, I don't know the word you used.
I don't know, but you were like, is Mercury in retrograde?
It's like in Mercury.
That, dude, after you said that, I was like, you know, like, I don't believe in any of this stuff, but I'm going to look it up. And so I looked it up and I was like, if Mercury is in retrograde, then maybe all these people are right.
See?
So it's not. It's not. So.
Oh, it's not. It wasn't in retrograde. No. Okay. No. See? Wait, I like that. You, I like that you looked that up. You guys go look that up if you're listening. You're like, what the heck is Mercury in retrograde? Because every Instagram post I see sometimes when people are just having like a bad week or if something happens, it's just like out of the ordinary. I see so many people on Instagram say, is Mercury in retrograde? Or yeah, like that's the reason why all this stuff is backwards.
Nope. It's just you and I being you and I.
No, exactly.
No excuse here.
Right. Totally. Honestly, the weather here has been so great too. So obvious, everyone knows that my moods depend on the weather a lot of times. And in Philly, it's been like in the high 60s, 70s and sunny. So my moods have been, yeah, totally.
Well, changed with I don't that. Know if you saw my Instagram stories, but I'm looking for places to move. So I can't stand the storm. What is
that?
Here.
What's that about? Well, wait, can you tell us a little bit?
The tornado sirens are going off legit every weekend. At this point, it is getting ridiculous. Like, I'm like, what is going on? Like, I can't take this. And I have like my top three fears is just like a tornado taking me. And like, oh, I just can't. And gosh, it's bad here. Like every weekend. And it's always, it's weird. It always happens at this, like, I'll go to my workout and then it's sunny. And then I'll leave my workout and it's like about to like tornado down. And I'm like rushing home and I feel like deja vu. I'll post a story and I'll like talk about it. And I feel like deja vu at this point. I'm like, guys, I can't make this up. I'm leaving my workout and the tornado, we're under a tornado watch. Like how? So if it happens this Friday, I'm literally moving.
See, that's something that I've never even heard of what that noise would sound like. Cause we don't have tornado. I mean, is it just like a sound that where is this? Like, where do they just, is it in the city? They just put off this bell or something? What is it?
Yeah, they're in like, I guess every city and it's weird.
Probably like a fire alarm, basically,
no,
right?
It's actually like a very eerie sound. I go to YouTube when we get off this podcast and type in tornado siren.
Okay.
Anyways, here's the thing. Like, I grew up in Houston and in Houston we had hurricanes. So. Mm-hmm. So hurricanes, it's like you have time, right? Like you can like get out and you like, if you stay, you're like, that's on you. But here it's just like when the sirens go off, basically it means a tornado can drop at any moment. Like there's rotation in the sky so you're sitting there and you're like, oh my gosh, like a tornado could just drop on my head. Like it's it's not for people with anxiety. And so what do y'all have? And like everywhere has something.
We don't really have like hurricane. I mean, we could have a hurricane. It's not that bad. We have a lot of snow.
Yeah.
You but know, like flooding sometimes. Flooding.
I gotta get out of here.
No, I know. We don't have really earthquakes either. I think it's probably why my parents moved here. Because we don't, there's not sense. Really those natural disaster type of things. I don't know why, too. Like, anyone who's like a, what is it, geologists or something? I don't even know who talks about that. Please contact me. I'm very curious.
Okay, wait. I want to get our guest on here and then I want to ask her.
Okay. Yeah, but she might not know.
No, we'll see if Dr.
Jen knows about
if she has any
about the anxiety weather. Related to tornado.
No, not that.
Okay. Well, let's get her on because I am excited about today. If anyone's been following my stories or on the Anxiety Chicks Instagram, you might have seen that we're having an amazing neuropsychologist on today named Dr. Jennifer Wolkin. She goes as Dr. Jen, and she is a clinical neuropsychologist. And I want to mention that she did go to Harvard. She's Harvard trained. She didn't really want me to mention it because, you know, everyone says Harvard. Oh my gosh. But you know what? I needed to mention it because I think that's pretty freaking cool. And she's also a writer, a speaker, and a mental health advocate. She founded a private practice with an appreciation about the mind and the body. And she is everything that you need to know about neuropsychology. So I'm so excited to have her on here. So welcome, Dr. Jen.
Thank you. Welcome. I am just so grateful to be here with you too.
We are so excited too. And we have a couple questions from people we're going to get to at the end, but I want to give you
my question in. Allison.
Oh, Taylor has a question already. Hold on.
I just have to chime in because I was a week years old, like last week years old, when I learned that Mercury retrograde was called Mercury retrograde, because it's like literally when Mercury appears to be moving backwards from the Earth.
Boom. That's it.
I am like mind blown.
That's it. That's okay. Why.
That's why it's called Mercury retrograde, because Mercury looks like it's moving retrograde from the Earth.
So why does that affect us?
Oh, that I don't know. See, I don't know how it affects us psychologically, but I just like learned that specific fact.
Oh my God.
I think that maybe I don't even know. I want to look into this, but I think maybe it's because if it's moving backwards and it's like, wow, it feels like everything's like just going, everything's backwards right now. And it's like, that's kind of anxiety.
I agree. I think it's a cycle. I think because of the name, sorry to interrupt you. I think that's it. I think it's just our interpretation, right? I don't think Mercury actually moving backwards, like does something to like the Earth such that us humans, right? Like, feel it physiologically. I think it's all in our interpretation, which is what can lead to anxiety, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So where do you currently live right now?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm in New York City.
Okay. So I'm looking for places to move. Do you have bad weather?
Wait, so where are you? I heard you talk about...
I'm in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's just, it's not doing good here.
You know, come on up.
Yeah, y'all have a ton of people moving out. So how is that?
You know, yeah, for a while there, it was like the city that never sleeps was taking a really big nap.
Right.
But, you know, it's coming back. I mean, we're New Yorkers.
Okay.
We're resilient.
Are you in Manhattan?
I'm in Manhattan proper.
Oh,
I've been
my
there
God.
For like many years. I know. Wow. Where are you?
So I'm in Philly, and my sister lived in New York, in Brooklyn for a long time. My best friend lived in Midtown Manhattan. I mean, I love New York. It's
And you're
I
so felt, close also.
I know. We should actually get together.
Yes,
Let's
please.
Talk about that
I
after
love
this.
Philly so much. I love Philly.
We're so close.
I would move there.
Oh my God.
Maybe Philly.
I know. I got to get out of Texas, guys.
Could you imagine? Awesome.
Let's get intervention to getting Taylor out of Texas.
Yes, exactly. Before we started talking, when Taylor and I were talking a little bit, and you guys started talking about this, I think I was like, save it for the podcast, because I thought it was such a great conversation you guys were having that our listeners would love to know. So Taylor, why don't you kind of talk, you asked her a little bit about what a neuropsychologist is and had
yeah,
some
I guess, there. I guess when Allison first came to me with Dr. Jen, I was just like, okay, so what makes just an outsider looking in, obviously you guys, like you picked what you want to study and you went into this knowing like to this y'all, to you guys, it's just like, what do you mean you don't know what this is? But to us, it's just like, okay, what's the difference between you two? Like, I just want to know.
I actually think it's a very important question, because I think there's so much, you know, question around the different types of therapists, and especially with the influx of everyone on the social media, which
absolutely
can be an extraordinary thing. I think it gets really like blurry sometimes. So I actually really appreciate the question. I think it's very important. Well, I don't like saying Harvard. I do really do like talking about my training, because I think it's very important that people know exactly what it is I'm trained for. So I guess, first of all, I did my PhD in clinical health psychology. And as a health psychology, first and foremost, I'm interested in the way biological, psychological, and social factors interact with and affect our overall being, well-being. And so a lot of my work includes exploring the relationship that stress, health beliefs, and coping styles, and of course, other psychosocial factors play into our functioning. And then after my PhD, I did a 2-year neuropsychology fellowship. And it wasn't my first time, you know, it wasn't my first foray into neuropsychology. My internship at Mount Sinai was at the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. I did externships at NYU's Comprehensive Epilepsy Center. But then after my PhD, I did a 2-year neuropsych fellowship. And I guess what that means is that I'm trained to parse out and have a better understanding of our cognitive strengths and weaknesses and how those possibly interplay with emotional and physical functioning and also impact, you know, relationship to self and others. So basically, neuropsychology is a specialty of psychology that seeks to understand the relationship between the structure and function of the brain and thoughts and behaviors.
Huh. So how would I know to go to you versus like just Allison?
Such a good question. So you would know to go to me. First of all, I am a trained as a psychologist. So okay. I can see anyone with mental health challenges. Of course, I do have area of expertise. So for example, I would refer out if someone came to me with addiction or substance abuse and use. I want to make that very clear. But I can see most any other, except someone would also come to me if they were struggling with their memory, with their language functioning, with their attention. So I see a lot of attention deficit clients.
Oh my gosh. Like ADHD, yeah. ADD?
ADHD.
Can yes. we talk on that? What is your take on, I mean, this is my generation. So I'm 26.
Yeah.
And in high school, so that was about, I don't know how many years ago. Anyways, there was this time, and I went to a very competitive high school. There was a moment when everybody and their mom all of a sudden got prescribed AD. Yeah. I'm not going to say the exact. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Adderall, I wasn't supposed to say that. I don't know if it's bad to say that or not, if they can come after us, but Adderall and Vyvanse, like it was just like everybody, and it was so easy. I mean, I was. So that was actually what started a lot of my panic disorder, because I got prescribed Adderall and Vyvanse.
Yes.
Type of personality. And it wasn't ever enough. And I didn't need it. I don't think I did. Like I always did good. But I went to this lady and, you know, I sat there. These were the questions I got. Do you have trouble focusing? Well, yeah. Mm. I mean, I think we all do because we're a technology generation. And then it was like, just a few basic questions. And then I left with a prescription and a diagnosis.
So that is not okay. I'm not saying that prescriptions aren't important if there's true organic challenge, right? 100%, right? I'm the first one to say if it's needed, there should be no reason to suffer and push through more than you mm-hmm. need to without the help of a great resource. However, I think it's prescribed too much. And I mean, what a great segue into our topic at hand, because literally you took a nervous system stimulator.
Yeah.
And which mimics the symptoms of panic. And there you are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. And nobody asked me like, because when you read the leaflet, which, you know, no one ever does. If someone, do you have in your family any like mood disorders or any of that? I was never asked.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You weren't even asked that. Oh my
gosh. No.
I wanted to be like, oy, oy vey.
Or how could she not see? No, she didn't like when my mom was in there to my mom, she was like, you might even have some ADD. Because my mom was so nervous about me getting, because my mom was just like, I cannot believe like you're getting, this is meth. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
no, it actually is meth, like methamphetamine.
I know.
If you look at, yes. It
changed my whole personality.
Well, I would argue that, but I hear you just semantics wise, but I hear, I totally hear what you're saying. Also, I really want to talk so much right now on AD. I just have so much to say right now. So stop me. But first of all, the gold standard for ADHD assessment and diagnosis rather is comprehensive clinical assessment, right? So we don't in theory need all these fancy schmancy like neuropsychology computer tools, right? But you have mm-hmm. to really understand what it is. And you have to really be very, very specific with your questioning. So like in theory, someone could come to me and like, I will take like 2 to 2.5 hours and can diagnose them without using any other thing except interview. However, like we do like augment for, you know, especially when we're getting people accommodations for testing, you know, extra time on testing, et cetera, things like that, or other accommodations. We have to document specific tests, but the standard is clinical interview. However, it has to be an actual comprehensive one, not just, do you have trouble focusing? I mean, we're all, I don't, first of all, anyone else have pandemic brain, I like to call it?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, if we diagnosed all of us with ADHD, that would, this year, we'd be overlooking.
Right. Well, and the thing is too, you know, when, cause I think, another part of, I'll say when I refer, so to get it a little clearer, I guess, between me and Dr. Jen, a lot of times I will refer my younger clients, younger children clients to a neuropsychologist for purposes of getting assessed for either ADHD or some other type of like neurological type of concern, especially for their parents to submit to schools.
Yes.
Because a lot of the school systems, if you come in with this type of assessment, it will help get them more services in the school or get them tested for it with the school psychologist or something like that. So is that something else that you've done or?
Yes. There are specifically child neuropsychologists.
Okay.
But I do, I can do that. It's not my specific area of expertise.
Oh, okay.
And since there are so many child, but I do see a lot of clients meet from 18 on. So I see the kids, the children, the teens who want to go to grad school, to get into college, medical school, all that.
Got LSAT, it. Okay.
All that. Right. Early intervention really, truly is the best. So
yeah, right, right.
And here's another thing, and I know this isn't our topic we had talked about talking about, but that's life. Anxiety and ADHD are often, first of all, they can often go together. That's, they can also actually be what we call, right, comorbid, but they can co-occur. But also they can be misconstrued for one another too. So it's like just, it's like hard to parse.
No, that, I think that was me because I think I went in. So here's the thing. I got Adderall, I got Vyvanse, and you know what it did? It took away the social anxiety I didn't realize I had because I felt like almost just able to talk to people without overthinking about it. And I just think I was so hyper-focused on, you know, whatever, that I wasn't worried about those other thoughts in the back of my mind. Like, oh, what if they think this of you? Or like, blah, blah, blah. Like I felt so social and confident with my socializing.
That's interesting. Well, I'm just so glad that you benefited from that and that you, like, at least used it in a way that cultivated more awareness for you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about the panic, of course, but I'm glad that you were able to find, you know, something about it that gave you information that was needed.
Yeah, well, so it actually led to me figuring out that all along it was anxiety.
Mm.
So then I went through, like, this whole time in my life. And anyways, aside from the topic, I think that a lot of people who are told they have ADD, ADHD, it could be either, like you said, with anxiety or misdiagnosed. It just feels like everybody's getting the diagnosis nowadays.
Well, I'm curious, what is the connection there, Dr. Jen? Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, I guess, I mean, as anxiety survivors, right, me being included in that, have you ever noticed that when you're anxious, it's hard to concentrate?
Yeah.
So that would be the most, I guess the most, like, what's the word? Like obvious understanding.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it also at the same time, right, can make ADHD worse. So also with anxiety, as you know, there can be a lot of psychomotor agitation.
Yeah. Can you explain a little bit about what that is?
Yeah. So psychomotor agitation is things where you just have trouble concentrating. It's like feeling restless. You feel like you want to jump out of your skin. I've experienced this when I had my panic attacks. We didn't even discuss this, but I had panic disorder at age 15 after a loss. And my grandmother had passed suddenly and we were very close. And so I had a lot of psychomotor agitation. And then because of that, I couldn't sit and focus and concentrate on anything. So I actually had to cancel or defer finals that year in high school.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, again, I can go on and on. There are so many, right? And of course there are clear differences, but it's really difficult to recognize, because especially if there's like hyperactivity involved. So the hyperactivity and the psychomotor agitation look alike a lot.
Right.
Sometimes with anxiety, like we do let's say, you know, we're reactive, we're more impulsive, which is a hallmark of, you know, ADHD sometimes, right? So,
yeah, I feel like I definitely struggled with ADD. I wasn't really hyperactive, but growing up, as a child, it was very hard for me to focus. I mean, academics were a lot harder for me. And
how old?
Oh gosh. I honestly can't even tell you an age, because I just always felt like it was.
Yeah.
So I probably, honestly, going back to grade school.
That is what we look for. That's a hallmark that we look for, that it goes back that young. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So that makes
sense. I'm not making any diagnoses on here, but yeah, that's just something that like perked my ears up. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And I still know to this day, I mean, I also went to a school that was more private school. So, you know, they didn't really have access to, you know, having an IEP or getting those services as much as a public school would. So I think I would definitely have been evaluated if I was in a public school.
You know, okay, we're getting real here. I'm going to say same. So I recall that I was the kid who was always, I did well in school. And also, though, I was always sent to the principal because I was talking and sending notes and calling out answers. I couldn't take actual notes in class.
Hi, healers. Allison here. So I want to talk to y'all a little bit about one of our new sponsors, BetterHelp. I'm so excited to tell you about this online counseling platform because as a licensed therapist, I'm a huge advocate of mental health awareness and truly believe in providing affordable counseling services to anyone, anywhere. Let's face it, there's so many areas in the United States and around the world that can make it so difficult to find affordable counseling. And especially if you live in a more rural area, it can be really hard to find a counselor, which is why I love this online platform. BetterHelp is an online mental health healing platform that provides online counseling and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's a professional counseling service done securely online and is available worldwide. What's even better is that there are a number of different licensed counselors who specialize in all different areas of mental health. BetterHelp makes it so easy to log onto your account at any time and contact your therapist directly. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses and can schedule as many weekly video or phone sessions as you would like. As a therapist, I know that it's not always possible to find the right therapist for your needs, especially the very first time. So BetterHelp has actually made it so easy to facilitate great therapeutic matches. And if you don't find a connection with your first counselor, there's absolutely no charge to change counselors if you ever need to. How amazing is that? And if you find that you're struggling financially, they also have financial aid available. So we have a special offer for all Anxiety Chick listeners today. Sign up now and receive 10% off your first month. Just visit betterhelp.com/theanxietychicks. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, /theanxietychicks, and join over 500,000 people who are taking charge of healing their mental health with an experienced counselor today.
I was the kid in class who was sort of bored in class, who did well enough, who did well, that no one suspected that anything could be up. But, you know, I had a hard time sitting and taking notes. I had a hard time, calling out the answers, and I would take notes and I would go to the principal. I get sent to the principal and talk in class a lot. And I never put it together until like maybe during my postdoc 10 years ago or 11 years ago, when I was mentioning it to a mentor.
Oh my gosh.
I know, because I fell through the cracks, because I went to yeshiva. I went to private school, not to diss on a yeshiva, but just to say that they didn't know what, like you said, like an IEP was, or so yeah. I was doing quote well enough to, to have it be hidden. But in retrospect, it just all becomes so clear. I was the last one to finish, the tests. I would always do well, you know, essentially, but you know, the process to getting there wasn't always, you know, it was just more complicated than it looked on the surface. And I think it's very easy to get missed. And thankfully I've compensated, but, you know, and I had the resources that I needed in some ways, but not everyone gets that opportunity. So I think it's just always important to be aware of this and make sure that we're all aware.
So you talk a little bit about how ADHD, I guess, is something that you see a lot in the assessments you do. And I'm curious, you mentioned earlier about how you look at the brain and how you know, the brain plays a part in our thoughts and behaviors or feelings. And I am curious if you can tell listeners a little bit more about kind of the parts of the brain and what control, like, I don't know how much you know, and I'm just me learning about the parts of the brain that actually control our, you know, behaviors and our feelings and stuff is so interesting to me.
Well, I guess, you know, I haven't brushed up on this in a while. However, right, ADHD is considered a brain, quote, disorder. Don't love that term, but it is what it is. And there's definitely research that shows that there are differences in brains of, you know, children with ADHD and those where there aren't. And most of this, I think, points to the frontal lobes, which we know, right? Yeah. Which we know is the area of the brain responsible for problem solving, impulse control, planning, decision making, attention, right? Both sustained attention and working memory, even time perception. And so I think that they've categorized ADHD as like a frontal lobes systems, quote unquote, disorder. So they've noticed challenges in that specific region that can lead to, you know, the symptomatology.
Yeah. And I mean, is that similar to someone with anxiety disorders?
Yeah. So it's so hard to say. However, yes, when we're in panic mode, right? So not necessarily not necessarily specifically if we have an anxiety disorder per se, but if we're in panic mode and we are chronically stressed, or our nervous systems are dysregulated, the brain area that shuts down most easily, and they've seen research where is the frontal lobe, and they've seen research that the frontal lobe actually shrinks. And so there's a similarity there, right? So if there's chronic stress, the amygdala, right, the fear-based part of the brain, has the chance to grow in volume. And that just means that there's more gray matter and it's more active. And the frontal lobes are less active, and we need our frontal lobes for, you know, like all the things I just mentioned they're involved with. And the other thing is that when we're chronically stressed, our frontal lobes and the amygdala don't talk as much as they need to. So the connection between them is weakened.
Wow. Wow. So can you, okay, we got a lot of questions about this, and can you talk a little bit about the vagus nerve, because and vagal tone, because I don't know if anyone listening has never heard that before, or even if you have, and maybe you're kind of learning a little bit more about the importance of the vagus nerve in your autonomic nervous system and how it plays a role in anxiety and stress. So can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, no, I'd love to. I love the vagus nerve. I feel like we're just starting to speak more about it. We haven't as much. And basically, it's crucial to our overall wellness. It's one of the 12 cranial nerves and runs down from the brainstem, down the neck, into the abdomen, and also just innervates, which means that it crosses paths with also other organs like the lungs, the heart. It even goes through our larynx, our throat. And basically, these are the nerve networks that are lines of communication between the brain and the body, and vice versa, the body and the brain. And the vagus nerve is the 10th one. It's the 10th cranial nerve. It's the longest. It's the largest. It's called that, actually. You might have heard this, because vagus means wanderer in Greek. So it's like, you know, it's vagrant throughout our bodies. It's a traveler. It, it like swings through lots of the major organs, and it's linked to lots of challenges, inflammatory challenges, and also anxiety. I think that the vagus nerve is like a super highway. I would say it goes from the core, which are our core, which is our brain, to the depths of our gut. And Taylor, this is probably where a lot the gut brain axis comes to play with your work,
right?
Yeah, the vagus nerve connects the brain to the gut and is actually one of the pathways that researchers have identified as mediating that gut-brain connection, and why vagal tone is so important, right? So basically, the vagus nerve is in charge of turning off that fight or flight reflex that we have. It's almost like a brake. It's almost like it acts as like a brake for the stress response, right? Like on a bicycle, you have a brake when you're going too fast. I almost think of that brake as like the vagus nerve, right? So, you know, not to toot the vagus nerve's horn, but it's like kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, responsible for the mind-body connection. It's, some people say it's the mediator between thinking and feeling, because it connects the different parts of our brains, right? Our higher order thinking parts and other parts. And yeah, basically it's like listening to the way we breathe. It sends the brain and the heart, whatever messages our breath indicates. So for example, breathing slowly reduces oxygen demands of the heart, and then our vagus nerve takes note of that. I can keep ranting unless there's questions. Should I keep going?
Now, do you have anything, Taylor, you want to respond or no? Because I have a bunch of questions. I just want to give Taylor a chance.
I think something that's interesting to me is, do you believe that your anxiety or like your mind can trigger the vagus nerve to cause you to pass out?
Oh, interesting.
I don't know much about the passing out part, but I do know, I do feel like there's a connection between stress, anxiety, and fear and worry in the vagus nerve. I guess before I say anything more, I think it might be important to parse maybe we always say stress, we always say worry, we say anxiety, and maybe this can be a big clue. Do you pass out, Taylor? Is that?
No, but so in the past when I would get, I would maybe like stand a certain way, like in a social situation or something, and I could be locking my knees out, whatever, but it was always like my diagnosis was vasovagal synapse or whatever.
Syncope.
Syncope.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes. I mean, definitely. I mean, I'm not an MD, but I definitely think that you can have that sudden drop in heart rate and blood pressure. And then I'm sure the vagus nerve takes note. I'm just not 100% sure.
So is vasovagal and the vagus nerve not correlate? Like, is that the same thing?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the vagus nerve. Yeah. Exactly. Huh. Yeah. Vasovagal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's that nerve. For
right.
For sure.
I'm interested to just, I want to talk a little bit about the tone, the vocal tone and the connection with the vagus nerve, because that's something that when I started reading about it, I thought to myself, what does it mean to increase my vagal tone? That's what's going to help. Increasing my vagal tone means it's going to help keep me in a more like parasympathetic state more often. And I was reading different exercises that can help increase my vagal tone. And I'm just, can you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Yes. So I guess it's just the words we use, right? Like vagal tone is what we use when we're referring to the response of our vagus nerve. So how does it respond to stress? Is there, can we increase vagal tone or decrease, or is there poor vagal tone? Right.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Right. Like good vagal tone, for example, like helps us lower our blood pressure, balance our mood, help with digestion. It's actually also associated with lower systemic inflammation. That's very much an interest of mine, but that's an aside. Yeah, it lowers cortisol levels. And then on the other hand, like poor vagal tone, that's where we get into digestive issues and anxiety. And even like people are saying like just autoimmune stuff. But I mean,
For the average listener, could you like define what vagal tone is?
Yeah. No, I get vagal tone is referring to how well the vagus nerve is functioning in how well the vagus nerve is functioning relative to the stress that we're experiencing.
Okay.
Yeah. And so saying, you know, I like that you put it in a way that said, you know, if you have, you know, good vagal tone, right? It's so if you do these, it's like, I want to get into certain types of interventions or exercises that you feel like you've read about for good vagal tone. So the listeners can maybe put things into practice, because I think strengthening that vagal tone is going to kind of help you when you are highly stressed or really overwhelmed or feeling anxious to kind of help your body, right? And your mind not have the same responses as you normally would, but if you are highly anxious, maybe you would respond not as, in a way that would be as dangerous in your mind. You know, the vagal tone practices might be helpful to kind of, keep your body balanced.
I mean, because basically it's, you know, we have the rest and digest. We always think of our fight or flight response, but we have a natural relaxation response, right? There's the autonomic nervous system that consists of both the sympathetic nervous system, which is the more fight or flight, which is the fight or flight one, and then the parasympathetic, which is rest and digest. And what the vagus nerve essentially can do is, are you guys there? I thought that I lost.
No, yeah.
Oh, you're here. Oh. The vagus nerve does is it helps us, I guess it's like the king or queen of the parasympathetics.
Okay.
It really helps us. We use it to help us really tap into our ability to soothe our nervous system.
Okay. Awesome.
So does that make sense? I want to make sure that I'm getting it across.
To me, it makes. Does it make sense, Taylor?
Yeah.
Because I think it's, you put it in a great way that I think it is understandable, because I know that this topic is difficult to understand sometimes, right? All the scientific stuff and all that stuff. But
it's very cerebral, very scientific. So I just want to make sure I'm explaining it, and I want to be sensitive to the fact that I want to make it digestible for your listeners.
No pun intended.
Exactly. Pun intended. Totally intended.
Unintended, actually. Yes. Pun intended. So can you talk a little bit more about then, I guess, some of those exercises or things that we can do to strengthen our vagal tone?
Yeah. It's like a big topic these days, and I love it. So, well, first of all, for me, I guess I always – my first – recommendation is always cultivate awareness, right? Like tune in to how your body feels, what your mind's saying. If you're not aware of how your body feels when you're stressed, and I think actually, you know, Taylor spoke to this when we were talking about our whole other conversation, like you didn't realize that you were having anxiety until you were made aware of it by your physiology. So I think if we're not aware of how our body feels when we're stressed, then it's hard to know what to give it and to get some rest and relaxation. And I think it's also hard to know what rest and relaxation feels like. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like the first and foremost, people will like jump right into like, okay, and do this and do this. And I'm like, let's cultivate awareness. And I think that's maybe my mindfulness background coming in, right? Like take note of your body's baseline physical state when you're calm, so that you can then notice how stress changes your body. And then you can notice again when you relax. Does that? Yeah. And also like at the same time, because I believe that in anxiety, disorder is both needs both bottom up and top down. I believe that it needs both bottom up and top down treatment. And what that means is that anxiety is a confluence, I think, of our worry that takes place in the frontal lobes and a more just like reflexive physiology that's more reptilian. And then the anxiety is basically limbic, which is the limbic part of the brain. So I believe that cognitive behavioral therapy helps when we can calm ourselves down, when we can use what we call bottom-up therapeutics, right? And that's when we're really tapping into the vagus nerve. We're really, really like trying to increase what we've just called our vagal tone. And then when we can get our frontal lobes back online a little bit more, then start to ask, what am I thinking? What kinds of thoughts am I having? Are these helpful, unproductive thoughts? Am I catastrophizing? Am I using a lot of what if statements? And so again, just like all that to say, just getting a general understanding of both your body and mind's baseline so that you know what you're dealing with. And then my next tip, my number one tip always is regulating your breath. So there's so much research. I do lots of breathing exercises in my new book. There's that shameless plug for my new book, Quick Calm. But truly, there's a lot of breath work in there. And I have this rectangular breathing exercise in my book that really speaks to an understanding of increasing vagal tone, and I'll tell you why. Because research shows that mindful deep breathing from the diaphragm reduces cortisol, et cetera, but here's the thing. To really invoke the vagus nerve, we need to make sure that the exhale is longer than the inhale. And so a lot of people will say do boxed breathing, like breathe in four, exhale four. And that's going to calm you a little bit, but it's not going to really increase vagal tone per se. We need to really, really like reduce that heart rate. Let the vagus nerve know and let you know that the heart rate is coming down, et cetera, et cetera. And for that to happen, we need to make the exhale at least double the inhale.
Can I ask you a question about breathing really quick?
Yeah.
Does it actually matter if you're breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth? Or is it, even if it's, say you're doing, you know, breathing in for four, out for six, you know, the breath is longer. What is it? Tell me a little bit more if that matters or.
Yeah, I think it's just style.
Okay.
Like different styles of breathing, but don't quote me on that. I think like different, like there's yoga, more yogic pranayama and other kinds. I like my nose closed. The part that I know for sure is that the exhale has to be longer.
Okay. Good.
But yeah, let something to look, something for us to research after this.
yeah, for sure. I also heard that humming or singing is really good for vagal tone.
Exactly. I was totally going to say that. So humming and singing and laughing. And a lot of the reason for that is because our vagus nerve is actually connected to our vocal cords, right? So I said on the at the top of the segment talking about our vagus nerve, I had said that it innervates or travels through our larynx and throat. And basically, it really can touch our vocal cords. So when we do things like hum and sing, and even actually I'll add gargling.
yes, I've heard that too. Yeah.
We can increase our vagal tone. Taylor, you still there?
Yeah, no, I'm listening to you guys. It's so interesting.
Taking it all in.
So, I mean, in my mind, there's like science behind the term whistle, like whistle while you work, or, you know, because even whistling in some ways can help, right? So whistle while you work to me is like de-stress while you're working, like make sure to have a balance. Like I take that actually literally, that's that, you know, statement. I would say there's also a connection with listening to music. I mean, I don't know how many people have researched that. I'm sure there is, but, listening to relaxing music after a stressful event can lower levels of cortisol and other stress markers. And, you know, I don't know, this is getting a little bit off topic, but also no, like the ear is also considered a parasympathetic regulatory organ, actually. So when we stimulate the ear through like uplifting sounds or sounds that we feel like are healing, that can also stimulate the vagus nerve, which is why I play music, I listen to music, and I'm very big on like playlists. So I'm going to offer up a playlist on my community. And there's a method to my madness. But there are other things that you can do, right? Have you heard of exposing to cold?
Yes. I was just going to ask about that. Yes.
Yeah, so we originally learned this from scuba divers, right? They submerged in cold water. They noticed an automatic survival instinct kick in, and that was, you know, that helped them lower their heart rate because they wanted to conserve oxygen. So putting an ice pack near the vagus can help regulate emotions by increasing vagal tone.
Yeah, that's like hydrotherapy, right? Is that what it's called?
I think cryotherapy. I'm not sure.
Cryotherapy.
I'm not sure. It could be. Yeah, it could be one or the other. Yeah, it could be something.
I've started reading. There's not so much on it yet, but like, you know, I've been trying to research more and more about it and reading about Wim Hof.
Yes.
The Wim Hof method.
Yeah.
Anyone just Google that if you're listening. He's this, you know, kind of pioneer in this type of cold therapy. And it's so interesting learning the science behind it. I think it's really important to know the science behind all of this and how our body is and the biology of things, right? Like the mind and the body are connected. I mean, at the end of the day, this is, you know, the statement that should just be literally placed everywhere that everyone can remember, no matter what they struggle with, is that the body and the mind are connected. 100%.
1000%. I also just feel like this is important to talk about because, like, we talk so much about involuntary functioning, and we used to think that all autonomic nervous system was like off limits. It's like, okay, this is just sort of all reflexive and we have no control and it's involuntary functioning. And then there are things like biofeedback and all these other ways that we've just talked about that help us and empower us to know that we can actually literally help our nervous system work for us, right? Like evoking the vagus nerve and increasing vagal tone is totally within our reach in any given moment. And I just find that extraordinarily empowering.
Well, that's awesome. Well, unfortunately, we have to kind of wrap this up because I know, Taylor, you have a client. You got to get it.
Yeah. I'm like, I think it's been a 50-minute episode now. We could talk forever.
I know. I have so much more to say. So maybe we can do some lives or whatnot. But I definitely want to talk with your community on neuroplasticity and all that really amazing, juicy, brain nerdy stuff. But thank you for having me.
Yes, I think we have to have you back on, honestly, because there are so many different things to talk about. And you just gave us so much information. I love it. And you're so great. And I just want to give you an opportunity to kind of plug all of your stuff. Where can people find you?
Thank you. That's so sweet. Yeah. So for right now, the thing that I'm plugging is my recently published book. It's 2 months old. Happy birthday book. You can find it at quickcombook.com. It's called Quick Calm, Easy Meditations to Short Circuit Stress Using Mindfulness and Neuroscience. And I'm happy to raffle one to your listener if that works for you. Yeah, I would absolutely, it would be my pleasure. May it be of service. And you can also find me at DrJenPsych_ on Instagram and on Twitter.
Oh my gosh. Yes. The raffle. Let's talk on DMs about that and see.
Yeah, I hope that was okay to say. It was just like a very, instinctual, let's do this. Let's just be of service here. Like, why not?
No, I love that. And maybe we can do kind of like a giveaway or something.
Oh, yeah.
On our Instagram.
1000%. I'm in.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you again so much. And at the end of each episode, Taylor and I usually give a healing tip of the week and Taylor kind of just gives a small quote. But I want to tell everyone, because I mentioned the Wim Hof method. My tip would to be just go and look that guy up because it is very interesting. Even if you feel like it's not for you and maybe, you know, that's not a method for everybody. You know, everyone has different anxiety. Everyone has different treatments and healing tools, but just learn about it a little bit. And the vagus nerve and its response to colds. I think it's really important for people to educate or just educate yourself about the vagus nerve this week. That is my tip to your education. Taylor, do you have anything you'd like to say, just inspirational to our listeners?
You know, what's funny is last night I was actually listening to some article. Oh my gosh, did I just say listening to some article? I was reading some article and it said, stop playing the supporting role of everyone else's lives and learn to be the main character of your own.
I love that.
I know. It hit me, Allison. I was like, oh.
And you remembered that. That's how much it, you know, stuck.
No,
with
I read
you.
It and was like, oh my gosh, like, that's crazy.
Yeah. So there you go, you guys. Wise words. I love it. Yeah. Well, thank you again so much. We're definitely going to be connecting on Instagram. Everyone follow the Anxiety Chicks, the Anxiety Healer, and Health_Anxiety, and Dr. Jen. And we will be talking to you guys about another amazing anxiety healing topic next week. Oh, rate and review and subscribe. Oh. Okay. Love you guys.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much.
Hi, healers. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Anxiety Chicks with Taylor and I. As always, you can find us on Instagram. You can find me, Allison Sepinera, as the Anxiety Healer, and Taylor as Health_Anxiety. And as always, you can check out the Anxiety Healing School. I just dropped a new course called When Panic Attacks, Triggers That Create Fear and How to Overcome Them. All about overcoming your anxious triggers and finding more awareness on what contributes to your anxious thoughts and giving you all the tools on how to overcome them. It's a self-paced course, and if there's any struggle with finances, there's a payment plan available as well. So go to theanxietyhealingschool.com to check that out. And as always, go to peakofpanic.com to check out updates about Taylor's blog and her journal she's coming out with. Thanks, everyone. Happy healing.